offering forgiveness or to instead seeking forgiveness. So we're kind of turning the tables here. Before it's been what happens if somebody has wronged us. Now we're working through the situation, the very real life situation where we have acted out of line in a relationship that we have. And so that's going to be our focus this morning. Let me start with a story, or more like a memory. When I was 7 years old, I was being babysat by one of the teenagers at the church that we were attending. Now, I don't remember what led up to this, but I have this very vivid memory of her coming up to me, getting down to my level, looking me right in the eye, and asking for forgiveness. Again, I don't know what caused that to happen. There was definitely a story there, but I don't remember that. What I remember is her moving from her position of authority and looking me right in the eye and admitting that she'd made a mistake. That has really stuck with me. And it has stuck with me because even from at age 7, I was like, that's different. I'm not used to seeing that. And I think for most of us, we would admit that that's not what we're used to seeing people do. In fact, we're used to people doing the opposite. When people are out of line, or when we're out of line, maybe our first inclination is to try to ignore the fact that we did something wrong in the first place. Or when we can't ignore it, what we do is we try to pretend like it's not a big deal, right? We downplay it. That wasn't really as bad as what it seems. Or we try to justify the thing that we did that was wrong. Classic example, when I was younger, I get caught hitting my brother, and then when in that interaction with my mom, I'd be trying to convince her all the reasons why my little brother deserved it. Right? I wasn't that wrong that I hit him. This is why he deserved to be hit. I was trying to justify why my actions weren't as bad as they were. And I don't know about you, but I like these ways of dealing with my actions. I'm very good at downplaying what I've done. I like to find a reason to justify how I've behaved towards other people. I would much rather put a positive spin on things. I could spend a lot of time trying to come up with a positive spin on what I've said or what I've done. And the reason why I like to do this, the reason why I'm sure we all like to do this, is because it makes us feel better. It makes us not feel quite as bad. But the reality is, despite how we might feel, you know, we might not feel so bad about it, but the reality is that doesn't change how our actions or our words have impacted somebody else. Just because we've been able to put a positive spin on things doesn't mean that they have. And what my babysitter did was what Jesus is talking about in the text that we're going to look at this morning. And so we're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 5. And the verses that we're going to look at come right after what Jesus has to say about murder and hatred. And what Jesus says about murder and hatred basically is simply not killing somebody isn't good enough. Okay? So you shouldn't just congratulate yourself because you managed not to murder somebody. We got to be careful that we don't even get close to wishing that somebody was dead. The point being that we can't let our anger smolder, because when we let our anger smolder, we are becoming less human than the way that God created us to be human. And so we need to ask ourselves, what's the alternative? Well, in this passage, Jesus basically says, seek forgiveness. Go, make friends. Don't let things smolder. Instead, go and make things right. And so we're going to look at Matthew chapter 5, verses 23 to 26, and we're going to look at three things that Jesus says about what we're supposed to do when we're in the wrong. What does this mean? And then we're going to end with some application. So let me read, starting at verse 23. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to them. Then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you're still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. Well, in the first two verses of what Jesus says here, he's describing a scenario where somebody is going to worship. In Jesus' day, the Jewish people regularly made the trip from wherever they lived to Jerusalem so that they could participate in worship. Now, there were local Jewish meeting places called synagogues, but you couldn't offer a sacrifice there, and a sacrifice is a key expression of Jewish worship. And so in this scenario, what Jesus is describing is somebody who's made the effort to go to the temple in Jerusalem, and they manage to get a sacrifice, and they're standing in front of the altar about to offer their sacrifice, and it dawns on them that there's something wrong in their relationship with somebody else, that there's somebody who is holding something against them. And so this moves us to our first point this morning, and that is worship moves us towards reconciliation. The fact that Jesus sets this scene in the temple highlights a Jewish belief and a Jewish practice that it was necessary to make things right before we can properly engage in worshiping God. In other words, we can't worship properly when we're knowingly in sin with somebody else. It's an acknowledgement that our spiritual lives are not simply between us and God, and we're so tempted to kind of think it only goes this way, but it includes the reality that we're in relationship with other people. And that if we're not in proper relationship with those around us, then we will struggle to be in proper relationship with God. And so this is a part of the scene that Jesus is describing, where somebody is about to offer their sacrifice, but they can't continue because there is something that needs to be made right. Now, we're not Jewish and we don't follow the Jewish law, but we shouldn't be surprised by this connection between worship and reconciliation. See, when we enter into worship and when we encounter God, we will naturally find ourselves reflecting on our lives and who we are in light of who God is, and we will recognize where we fall short, where our lives don't yet look like Jesus. This is called conviction. And conviction should naturally move us towards action. And in the context of what we're talking about today, the question is, when we encounter God as we worship, when we encounter God and he points out a relationship that is out of sorts, will we listen and will we go and make it right? And I'm going to suggest to you that if we ignore God's prompting to fix a relationship, that we're not just leaving a human relationship broken, but we are actually hurting our relationship with God because we are choosing to not listen to him. We're plugging our ears and we're not listening to him. And so we are actually harming our fellowship with God. Now, what is interesting about the scene that Jesus describes is that it describes the reality that seeking reconciliation is not convenient. And this is our second point. And so the scenario that Jesus describes to his listeners, this is something that they would have known. 3 times a year, you were expected to go to Jerusalem for Jewish festivals. And this meant that they knew what it was like to have to make the arrangements to go. They would have to make arrangements for travel, for food, for lodging when they got there. If a sacrifice was required, they would have had to go through the process of obtaining a proper sacrifice. None of this would have been easy. It required time, it required energy, it required planning, it required money. Think about it this way. You and your family have decided to go on a vacation. You're going to a place like Ottawa, for example. It's doable, but there's planning and effort that needs to go into it. It's not just something you just do. You need to think about it. But in Jesus' scenario, the person gets to where they're going, and then they realize once they get there that something isn't right, and they walk away from it all. Again, going back to our scenario about being in Ottawa, you and your family finally get there, you get to the hotel, you unpack, you freshen up, you go to do some touristy thing, and just as you're about ready to actually, you've made your way through the line, you're about ready to do that touristy thing that you were looking forward to do, suddenly something dawns on you that you forgot something at home. And you turn around and you leave. You don't do what you were there to do. You just turn around and you walk out. Get in the car, go home. You don't even go back to the hotel to get your stuff. It sounds silly. But what Jesus is saying is that this is the right thing to do when we realize that we've harmed somebody and we need to do something about it before we can continue in worship. Here's the thing about seeking forgiveness. Forgiveness is rarely convenient. And it usually requires that we need to leave our comfort zones. See, seeking forgiveness means that we need to actually admit that we're wrong. And this requires humility and it requires sacrificing our pride. And we like pride. Pride makes us feel strong. Admitting that we're wrong, that makes us feel weak. That is not a very convenient thing to have to do, to make ourselves feel weak. Seeking forgiveness will mean that we need to have a conversation with somebody, and that conversation's not going to feel good. And again, we don't like doing things that don't make us feel good. Seeking forgiveness will likely mean that we have to go out of our way to have a conversation with somebody. Very rarely do these type of conversations just kind of fall into our lap. They usually require some sort of effort, a rearranging of our schedule, a going of somewhere, and that certainly means that we have to push through some level of awkwardness. Jesus' description here is of somebody who has made the effort to get to the temple. They're at the cusp of offering their sacrifice, only to turn around and go home in order to seek forgiveness. It's intentionally a bit over the top, but what it does is it underscores the priority of seeking forgiveness in the kingdom of God. And maybe it points us to the fact that as people who are followers of Jesus, we should always be in the habit and the practice of seeking forgiveness as we go, so we don't find ourselves in a scenario where we have to drop everything. Like seeking forgiveness is just a part of who we are. But when we find ourselves in a situation where we wake up to the fact that, hey, there's something there with that person, and I haven't addressed it, that we are willing to drop everything to go make it right. And this leads us to the rest of what Jesus says, which is that seeking reconciliation is preventative. And so the next scenario that Jesus talks us through is one that's clearly adversarial. In this case, Jesus is describing a scene or a situation where things have gotten so bad that the legal system has gotten involved. Now, it could be a really interesting conversation sometime for us to talk about how do we as followers of Jesus relate to a legal system and law and lawsuits and all that. That would be a really interesting conversation, but that's not the point of what Jesus is talking about here. Instead, we should see that what Jesus is doing is he's inviting us to see ourselves as the person who's clearly in the wrong. And he's suggesting that we should do whatever it takes to make things right. And in fact, one of the motivators for us is that if we don't, that if we allow an injury to fester, that it may mean something bad for us. Have you ever heard the saying, time heals all wounds? You familiar with that one? It's a nice saying, isn't it? I don't think it's very true. Because oftentimes, all time seems to do is make wounds worse, doesn't it? Back in my mid-20s, I was playing in this community softball league. It was pretty low competition. Like, the second baseman had a beer behind second base, okay? Like, it was low competition. One day, I thought I'd be all tough, and I went all gung-ho, and I slid into second base wearing shorts on a gravel infield. You can imagine what happened. I scraped up my leg pretty bad. This is the point where I tell you that if I was still in youth ministry, there would be a picture of my leg up there. But I've grown up, so I won't show you that picture. Now, being the tough guy that I was, I just kept playing. I looked at my leg and said, ow, that hurt. And I went and I continued playing. I was on a hot streak. Why would I want to end that? And it was a couple hours later that I finally looked down and I looked at my leg and I noticed all the gravel and the dirt that had made its way into the wound. And so I was like, okay, I should probably clean this. But it hurt. It wasn't fun. And so I thought, you know what? It'll heal itself. And you can imagine what happened next. It got infected. The rocks and the dirt, they didn't find their way out. They found their way in. And it got worse. And something that should have been temporarily painful became painful for a lot longer and became a whole lot less convenient, a lot more inconvenient. It was weeks before I could walk properly. It was weeks before it healed up, all because I didn't deal with it at the time. I think the same can be said about relationships, that the longer we delay in seeking forgiveness, the more difficult the journey of healing. And the more likely we are to face complications. And what Jesus is teaching us is that we need to be proactive in seeking forgiveness, to do whatever we can to make things right. And in the scenario that he is using here, it's pretty clear that we don't just do this for the sake of the other person, but we do this for ourselves, so that we can be freed from the consequences of our sin. And maybe the longer that we leave things, the greater the consequences of our sin. And so in this passage, Jesus is very much teaching us that seeking forgiveness needs to be a part of who we are as his followers. And so we're going to talk now about how do we do this. And I'm oversimplifying this process down to four steps, okay? As I did some reading this week, I read some great articles about people who really pulled it apart and talked about the process of seeking forgiveness and a lot more than what I'm able to talk about today. So these are just here's the Coles Notes version. But I just want to acknowledge that there's a lot more that's out there than what I'm able to talk about this morning. The first is that we need to actually admit that we are wrong. Seeking forgiveness means that we need to set our pride aside and recognize that we're not perfect. And this is not easy to do, and it's not something I think that comes naturally, because we want to be perfect. At least I want to be perfect. I want to be flawless. And often we aren't even honest with ourselves about our shortcomings. And so when I say admitting that we're wrong, what I'm actually talking about here is that we actually admit to ourselves that we are not perfect and that our actions have actually hurt somebody else, that we don't have it all together. And this connects very well with what Jesus says in the Beatitudes when he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Because the kingdom is for people who recognize that they're not perfect, recognize their poverty and their imperfection, and say, "I don't got this." That's the starting point for us as a follower of Jesus to say, "I don't have this." And in interactions with other people, we need to be able to recognize and be honest with ourselves and say, "I'm not perfect," and to start there. And once we realize that we're not perfect, this moves us into a conversation with God. And so we talk with God. We have an open, honest conversation with him about what's going on, and we ask for his insight and his leading. We say, "Lord, help me understand what's going on here. Help me understand where I went wrong." Or, "Lord, forgive me for hurting somebody that you care deeply about. Lord, help me understand what the next steps are. What am I supposed to do here? And Lord, give me the courage to face the person that I've hurt." Now, these first two steps are the easiest ones, I guess, because it's just you sitting in a room by yourself or you in your car. From here, we actually have to go talk to somebody, and that can be more difficult. But we need to do that. We need to have a conversation with somebody that we have wronged, and so we need to ask for forgiveness. Now, the conversation about asking for forgiveness, this takes courage. This takes vulnerability. This requires that we actually sit in front of somebody and we admit that we are wrong. And let's be honest, in our society, any admission of being wrong, it's a sign of weakness. It's a sign of failure. But again, remember that the way to the kingdom is by admitting that we are weak. And so we go to the other person and we seek their forgiveness. We make room for a difficult conversation and we name the wrong that we've caused. Now, sometimes in our conversations with somebody that we have wronged, they're going to respond to us and they're going to say, "It wasn't that big of a deal," or "Don't worry about it." They kind of brush it off. I think if we're serious about seeking forgiveness, we need to look them in the eye and say, "You know what? It is a big deal." And to demonstrate to them that we are genuinely there for reconciliation purposes. We are there to acknowledge where we have fallen short in our relationship with them. We're there to do what it to hear them out. We're there to make things right. Just not to allow them just to brush it off. And that might be the easy route, but that's not the route of seeking forgiveness. The last thing is, well, it's the most difficult thing for me, is to listen without getting defensive. And often we skip this, right? We walk up to somebody and we say, "Hey, I messed up, I'm sorry," and then we turn around and we leave them with all the emotions and we get in our car and we drive home. But this is an important step, because this is where we allow the other person to participate in the conversation, where we get to hear their hurt and we get to feel their pain and enter into it, and we realize what we've done and what we've caused. And the temptation in this stage is to get defensive, but when we get defensive, we're only justifying our actions, and then we aren't really seeking forgiveness, we're seeking to justify what we did in the first place. And that's the tough thing, to sit and to listen and to hear them out. And it's through this difficult process that forgiveness can be offered and forgiveness can be received. And so we need to work our way through this and to sit with the person that we've wronged if we are actually intending on that on reconciliation taking place. Now, realistically, we might find that this process is one-sided, right? Where the other person has no interest in offering forgiveness. In these situations, we need to maintain a posture of seeking forgiveness. That if the opportunity presents itself, that we are ready, willing, and able to seek reconciliation. But the reality is, we are only responsible for ourselves. We aren't responsible for how somebody else might act. We can't walk up to somebody and say, "Forgive me!" Okay? You know, Jesus says you have to. Like, that, you can't demand that of somebody. That's what God needs to do in their heart. And so part of this might be the reality that it's a one-sided. We seek forgiveness, and they might not be willing to give it. And so a part of this might be mourning. Mourning the broken relationship. Mourning the things that we hurt them in a way that has caused this deep wound. And seeking God's forgiveness. Knowing that as we seek God's forgiveness, God is in the business of remaking us, making us new, so that we aren't the same person who caused that injury in the first place. So it might be one-sided. But that's why the conversation with God is important. Now, I think that what I've talked about here can be applicable to most of us, all of us in this room. But I want to talk about my last point here, specifically to those of us who are followers of Jesus. Because here's something about reconciliation, is that seeking reconciliation is very much a part of our testimony. We're living in a time that is being described as being post-Christian. And there's a lot that could be said about what this means. But basically, it means that as a Canadian society, well, we don't identify Canadian society doesn't identify with our story as followers of Jesus or as the church like it did at one point in time. And one of the implications of this is that we need to rethink what does it mean to be the church, and we need to rethink about what our methodology is for reaching our neighbors who do not yet know Jesus. We have to reexamine all this stuff because the society around us has changed. Last week, Melanie, Charlene, and I went to a seminar that very much was on this topic. And one of the things that I was reminded of is that reaching those who don't yet know Jesus is not going to happen through organized church activities or events like it used to happen years ago. An example of a church event that was designed for outreach would be our Football Sunday event that we've done for a few years. That was designed to reach those people who did not yet know Jesus. This year, we're taking a break from that. And we're taking a break from that because in reflection, we thought, is this doing what we hoped it would do? Is it reaching people who don't yet know Jesus? And so we're taking a break to rethink it. But what we're learning is that the most effective strategy for us in outreach, for reaching those who don't yet know Jesus, is in the natural relationships that each of us already have with the people we live beside, with the people that we work with, the people we go to school with, that each of us have a natural network of people that involve people who don't yet know Jesus, and that this is the most effective way of us sharing Christ with them. Now, I'm not talking about making friends with your neighbor just so you can invite them to church, okay? They can smell that our motivation is for that, okay? And they will go the other way, okay? But what we're talking about is real relationships where we know them and they know us, where we share life over time. We make an effort to be with one another. And through this, we pray and we say, Holy Spirit, would you bring my faith into expression in a way that somebody else can recognize? And will you make conversations about Jesus to be natural and unforced? See, it's through our relationships that we can share Jesus most effectively, not through a program that we as a church might put on. Well, one of the ways that we can show people, other people, what following Jesus is all about is by being somebody who is willing to seek forgiveness when we have wronged somebody else. And the reason for this is it stands out. It is different. It is a way of doing life that is different than what most people are used to seeing. And it's a life that is characterized by humility, by love, by self-sacrifice, as we put somebody else's needs above our own pride. Things that are actually very characteristic of Jesus. And so it's worth remembering that we need to live out our faith, and as we live out our faith through seeking forgiveness, that we are inviting people to ponder Jesus and what Jesus is all about. And so as we think about seeking forgiveness, We should think about seeking forgiveness for three reasons. One, for the good of our own heart and mind, so that we seek forgiveness for ourselves. But we seek forgiveness also so that the person that we have harmed can experience wholeness and healing, like we talked about last week when we talked about giving forgiveness. That through the act of giving forgiveness, they might be made whole again, that wound might be healed. And so we seek forgiveness for the good of the person that we've hurt. But we also seek forgiveness because it's a good way of showing other people what Jesus is about. And so this week, my invitation, my challenge, should you want to take it up, because this isn't a light one, is to be thinking about who do we need to seek forgiveness? Is there somebody in our lives that we have wronged, and maybe we've kind of pushed it off to the side, but God has put it on our heart that we need to have a conversation with? If you ask that question, be ready for the response. But know that God will be with you and God will strengthen you to go work through this difficult stuff. And that you have a community of people here that are here to love and support you and talk you through the relationships that are messy and don't have nice, neat, tidy answers. Let's bow in prayer. God, we want to say thank you for bringing us together this morning. And we want to say thank you for our experience of forgiveness, that you have forgiven us of so much. Lord, help us not to be people who are characterized by pride, being too proud to go and address the hurt that we've caused. But instead, Lord, give us courage, give us strength, give us the supernatural ability to overcome awkwardness, if that's the case, to go and talk with those who maybe we've hurt. And Lord, it is our prayer that through your Spirit, that you would bring healing and wholeness to those relationships. God, as a church, we want to look like you more and more each day. And we want others to see you through us. Lord, do something special in us that makes it just so obvious that there's something different, something Jesus-like, something that people want to find out more about. In your name we pray. Amen.